Hello, hello, and welcome to the Next Level Loan Officers Podcast, the number one podcast for loan officers by loan officers.
With real originators in the trenches, just like you, every single day.
If they can go there, how come I can't go there? Well, you can.
Like, if you don't water your plants, you don't have future crops. You can't feed your family. You can't make a living. This is watering your crops.
You have to find your community and you have to dig in.
If it wasn't for you guys, I can tell you, probably my trajectory would have been a completely different one.
We'll see you on the next Level Loan Officers Podcast.
Well, guys, I mean, we're live and we didn't go through and like pull, what is it? Like pull, like who has the long stick versus the short stick for who's going to do this intro, guys. Didn't you do that growing up? You know, you'd like, your mom would have three sticks and you'd get to pull one and whoever had the long one won. I guess I'll just take it.
That's the biggest piece of cake, man.
Yeah, but welcome to the Next Level Podcast, guys.
You're the friend that, like, when everybody knew the rule was to call shotgun, like, you would just run and sit in the front seat and you'd be like, I'm already sitting here. So,
and then you guys could just fight over the back seat.
You'd be like, yeah. I'm taller than you all. My legs.
Okay,
like,
really quick.
We're just in here talking and you're like, I'm going to hit live.
And really quick, I have a question for you guys. I know Sean is of the era. I know Sean is. But do you remember a time where you could sit backwards in the back of a car legally with a seatbelt?
Sit back?
Yeah. Like, think about this for a second, guys. Like, this is important because, like, this was Americana. The Volks, like, it would be like the wagon, dude, that had the fold-up, yep, seat in the back, and you'd, yep, sit facing backwards, and it had a seatbelt.
Our best friends had that car.
That was a better seat than riding shotgun.
You also, do you remember the conversion, like the big old school conversion vans and like the bucket seats in the middle?
Oh yeah. It swivel. Oh yeah.
And so then the third row could face the bucket row.
I was too poor to have any of these things in my life.
Well, welcome to the Next Level Podcast on that note, where it's just three middle-aged white guys talking about their childhood.
Hey, dude, speak for yourself. I am not white.
Okay. So, you are middle-aged, just so we're clear.
That's true.
Okay.
Very true.
Well, wait, listen,
can people see us on here?
Yeah, they can. I mean,
okay,
they could.
I'm white then. I'm white.
Yeah, you are. Okay.
So, just so we're clear.
Although it started off really poorly, today's topic is exceptional and I'm super, yeah, excited about it because we've had such a kind of a shifting of importance in the mortgage industry in the last 12 to 24 months, where you should be spending your time, where, you know, where you used to spend your time, how that equated effort equated to dollars and how quickly you saw that impact from that effort and where we are today. And it's not right, not wrong, but I believe we're in a very different place today. And the conversations around staffing, team building, hiring, internal versus external, I think is so important. And for many of us, it's not just who to hire, but really thoughtfully understanding the cost of that hire. Because before, when the market was great, you're like, I need staff. I don't even care what it costs. I'm so desperate for help. And now you have to be a lot more intentional with the dollars you spend for the people that you align yourself with.
Yeah. How's it working for those companies that just threw people at problems and didn't fix their problems?
Well, you said it didn't fix their problem. I mean, I think it might have. It's like, you know, if you live in a flood zone and you have a bucket to, like, that doesn't actually solve the problem of having water in your basement, right? And you can hire more people with more buckets, but you still haven't gotten to the root problem. And so I think that really that's another kind of component of this that I do think we should talk about is really assessing, what do you need? Why do you need it? And then what's the best way to get that problem addressed or that challenge or that goal or that dream that you want to really, like, lean into? Is it internal? Is it external? Is it contract, full-time, part-time, VA, right? So I think it's such an important conversation that a lot of people have just over the years said, hey, yo, you got a problem on your loan? Get a loan partner. Just get a loan partner and that'll solve it. And it's like operationally, it's great to have somebody that's not in and out, on and off, in meetings, out of meetings, but like consistently working on just one thing. It's super important. But our industry's also gotten more efficient. Like the things that can get done now through automation, through integrations and things like that, it's just very different than it was 24, 36 months ago. And really, again, because there's a lot less business, there is a lot less of a need for that person to pull credit because there's less files, there's less opportunities for that. And so it's a lot more lead generation. It's a lot more branding now than it was 24 months ago.
Well, can I address what I believe to be the elephant in the room with this conversation?
Yeah, I love it. Let's get awkward.
I don't think it's awkward. It definitely won't be awkward between the three of us, but like, I'm still shocked at how many people I run into that refuse to hire anyone that can't physically be in a room next to them or with them.
Yeah.
The scarcity mindset around like, how do I do, bro, you dude, my, hey, get it, give it to me. Live podcasting on spring break. It has half naked kids in a room that,
I mean, this podcast has already gone off the rails so much. Yeah. Like, let's just lean into it.
So, story. One of my best friends right now, he's interviewing. It's not in the mortgage space, but he's interviewing for a sales position. And it's a cool opportunity. But the people running this company refuse to let him work remote at all. And so they're probably going to lose out on my buddy taking this job, because he lives an hour away from where this office is, and they're going to go find somebody that's less than him that can physically be in the room. And it blows my mind still that we're still concerned with, well, but I need to be able to like walk into your office and talk to you. All right. Every company I own is remote, and we have stronger relationships because we have to be intentional. Versus the people that just think they're doing a good job because they happen to see their people every day, but they're never having intentional conversations. And so, like, why? I'm just interested in, like, why do y'all think people are still so stuck in the physicality of the team?
I mean, I think part of it is that it's not that they want to have somebody in their office. It's that they think they need to. Because they think people are going to be like, their audience is going to be coming into their quote unquote office.
Yeah.
Or they just haven't had I call it an internal conversation. They haven't talked to themselves and said, hey, COVID in my market gave me permission to not meet with people in person as often. And especially people that don't really want to get in their car, get stuck in traffic, all to bring me a tax return that they can securely upload online, right? So I think part of it is that you got to have that conversation with yourself and ask yourself, what is it that my audience wants most from me? Is it convenience of meeting me in person? Like, is that what they want? And I would say that most people, that's not what they want as the primary need of you, the mortgage broker, the real estate agent, the sales guy, right? Or gal. I think two is, we talk about this a lot, but being on camera allows you to be off stage, meaning I don't need to meet with them in person because they see me all the time on camera.
Right.
And so they see me all the time, and it might even be like my daughter sitting on my lap. So they know me personally. And so they go, hey, if you just want to upload those docs online, we could probably just like do a quick Zoom call and solve this. They go, thank goodness, that's so much easier. So I don't think it's so much about the whole hiring a local person. It's they're doing that because they think they have a need that they need to address. And the reality is they probably don't really have that need.
Well, yeah. And just before we even talk about the hiring, just doing it online, the Zoom meeting to run my process of how I require before I'll meet with you, you have to upload all of your information or I won't meet with you. But doing the Zoom meeting, it's better than in person. I have people sitting in front of the computer, the lack of distractions going on around are less than even if they are in my office, and I can systematically go through my presentation. Now I could do that in person as well too, but the system of it is much more the same every single time when I control that environment, because the kids, although they sometimes are here in my office, they're almost never there on the Zoom call. It also allows me to operate with very few evening appointments, but by having it done that way as well too.
Well, Sean, and I want to hear your opinion on this, but don't you think you'll get more meetings done? Like you could do 30 minute back-to-back Zooms and get in 2 hours, what would take you all day to get done if you were meeting in person. Amen. And what I love about Zoom is like when you set it up correctly, it even does that like, hey, 5 minutes before your call ends. And so like Zoom will actually help prompt you to be like, hey guys, I know we've got 5 minutes left. Anything else we need to address? Where when you're in person, people linger, they hang out. Like 30 minutes is never 30 minutes in person. 30 minutes in Zoom is 30 minutes in Zoom. So yeah. I think that from an ROI, return on investment, because you have to do more actions to get less dollars right now, you've got to be way more efficient with your time. So we've gone off on a tangent, but it's so important because what people do, and Sean, I think you said this at the beginning, is they throw bodies at problems. They're not even addressing the problem. The problem of having somebody local is really something that you could address by cleaning up your process, using Calendly, integrating your Zoom account so people can select in person, have far less of those appointments available, driving everyone to Zoom. And then they go, wow, that was great. I picked a Zoom 3 hours from now instead of an in-person appointment 3 days from now, right? And so I think that's kind of the first step of this whole conversation around staff is first and foremost, what do you need people for? And is that even what your audience expects and requires? So yeah. Kyle, did we address that? Like the whole, like, why does our industry do this?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you did. I think the answer is that because a lot of the industry is still old school. And so, you know, you and I were talking offline and then I was talking to Sean about it separately, is like 2 years ago, you probably would have had a different checklist of like what your hire was for your next hire. And I think that's changed now. And even if you look at, even say 10 years ago, I think 10 years ago, people knew brand was important. People knew graphic design was important. People knew social media was a thing. But to hire that in-house, that was way more money than you were willing to bite off at that point. And so the virtual world has changed that drastically. And so because of that, like, let's jump into on today being, you know, March of 2024, both of you guys are growing mortgage companies. And so what does that, if you could snap your finger and like have that next hire right this second, what does that look like?
Sean, you take it first.
Well, I mean, like, I just like, it always used to be the first, if you go, let's go back 3 years or 10 years ago, it was always a loan partner was your first hire. Now being 18 months into my new company, I actually just in the last month hired my first loan partner, after we had a lot of other systems, built in place for what we're doing. You know, my situation is a little bit unique in the fact that I run several companies and my loan partner and my ops manager are my only two people who directly just work in my mortgage company. And then I have people that help me with my rentals and my co-working space and other things too, but that also work inside of the mortgage company as well too. So I have a very unique spin on what this has done. Now, some of those people are able to help me with branding and social media. And then, you know, like I work with some of our vendors who help me create videos and chop things up. And then my team then posts that content. But like, I think if I was just, you know, loan officer and I had a couple loans a month that I was doing, you know, there's still things that I'm not good at, like doing videos all myself, doing my own editing. Like, you know, I get a fair amount of traction, not necessarily saying it's business every month, but traction and interaction from those videos, from being present online. And I mean, I really think that is probably the number one or two hire that somebody needs to focus on right now. And the big difference in hiring a company or a VA to do that versus having somebody sitting right next to you locally is if I want somebody in my office, I'm gonna have to pay them 40 hours a week. If
right.
I hire somebody online or virtually or in another country. I mean, I might pay them for 10 hours a week, but actually 10 US dollars a week and get 40 hours a week out of them.
I would say that, you know, what I would tell anyone is, first and foremost, ask yourself, what did you do wrong? Like, so if you were going to interview somebody who had a great team, I would say, what did you do poorly before you did it well? Right? Because again, like that's where it's the things you don't know that you end up stepping into first. And I would say one of the mistakes I made and what I learned from that was I tried to hire people that I controlled, whether that was a full-time VA or a full-time staff member that worked for my company, before I thought of leveraging contract staff, meaning Fiverr, Upwork, or industry-specific contractors, right? Video editors, et cetera. And what I now know is if you can't communicate projects, timelines, expectations, needs with a contractor, you're going to be super inefficient with somebody that's there 40 hours a week, right? And you're never going to get your full hours out of that person because you haven't communicated the expectations, the needs, the timelines, the turn times, the copywriting, whatever. And so I would say, first and foremost, get really good working with contractors and get really good working with contractors in branding. Now, what people will say, so say, yeah, but I'm not a, and fill in the blank, I'm not a video gal. I'm not a social media person. For the people who aren't good at it, aren't doing it, aren't passionate about it, you need that staff member, those contract people even more, right? Because you have to be in it. You have to be online. You have to be present. You have to be going to events. You have to be those things to be a professional in 2024. For those who are good at it, it's as equally important because you need to do more of it. Like the thing you're best at, you should do the most of as much as you possibly can because you get such a high ROI on that. So you either need branding, marketing, social media staff because you're not good at it, or you need it because you're good at it, but you need it either way. And I think it should always start contract because then you teach yourself how to communicate first off with yourself. What am I really trying to solve? Because what we end up doing, what I did, I had a problem. I'd get on social media and I'd see a competitor putting on an event and then I'd get pissed. And then I'd get jealous. I'd get insecure. And so then I'm solving the wrong thing in the wrong way, right? Now I'm like, I got to do an event because that guy did an event. So now I'm bringing on a full-time staff member. I'm saying, we need to do events. But I have no thought process behind it. It's an emotional hire. It's an emotional decision. It's typically based on my insecurity. And then there's a person who doesn't know what to do. It's a ship without a rudder. And then 6 months from now, I'm like, that was a waste. That person didn't perform well. And it was because of me. So that's what I've done in the past. Now what I do is I say, where do I want to be in 12 months? Who do I want my company to become in 12 to 24 months? And I, for me, I go, I want my LOs to have on-demand graphic design, video editing, social media posts, copywriting, scripting. I want that on demand so that my people can do what they're best at, but still do the things that they need to do. And so now I go, okay, well, if that's what I need, that's a healthy need based on future dreams and goals, not reacting to something that was an insecurity or an anxiety. Then I go to contractors and say, who is the best at, and how can I get that to be an efficient, like, resource that I'm spending money and time on, right? And then once you're good at that, you're managing contractors, you have a system and a cadence for that. Then I'm like, okay, I'm ready to make an actual hire, whether that's a VA part or full-time, or whether that's a staff member part or full-time, or I'm going to drop this knowledge bomb.
Whoa.
It could be an intern or both or all of the above. And so that's, at least for me, it's branding, it's social media, it's the marketing and sales aspect of the company, not the operational side, right? And again, if you're a branch manager, an owner, and you have to do payroll, bookkeeping, all that, that's a whole nother conversation. That's your first hire because you don't want to owe the IRS money. But like for the bulk of us originators and agents and people that are in the trenches every day, I believe your first hire should be somebody that's going to build your brand, your presence, your opportunity to generate more leads, because that's top of funnel. And I don't want to build bottom of funnel before I've got the top of funnel, because I can do the bottom of funnel. To Sean's point, for 18 months, Sean, you were the operational leader in your organization. You were the originator originating. Now you're originating, but you're also engaging and networking and speaking. And then the origination is done by you and your team. And I think that's important because you are the expert on origination, developing your team to be experts, but you can't hire effectively what you aren't aware of or good at.
Well, and we also, we this part of the conversation should have probably happened at the beginning, but none of this works if we don't understand our worth.
100%.
Because we watch tons of mortgage people and real estate people that, like, they do their video editing, they do all of their social media, and their answer is because I like it. Like, I enjoy it. I'm good at it. But then they don't factor in that, like, but how much are you worth an hour? Because if you're worth $100, $200, $300, $500 an hour, but yet you're spending 90 minutes every night editing a video, even though you like it, you just spent, what, $750 if you're worth $500 an hour? To do a video that you could have paid somebody $8 on the internet to do.
And how is that working with your kid who was in the other room wanting to play Legos with you?
Right. Or you're too tired to want to do anything with your kids because you're doing these other activities. And, like, I remember being in seventh grade, and my parents were really good at what they did. And so they made a lot of money, and it was a Saturday morning, and there was somebody mowing our yard. And I was like that freaking punk seventh grader that was like, "Dad, why don't you mow our yard? Like, all of my friends' dads mow their yard. And why don't you?" Like, I was trying to make him look bad. And that was the moment where he taught me. He said, "Kyle, I'm worth several hundred dollars an hour when I can pay somebody $10 to go do what I don't even enjoy anyway." And I remember at seventh grade really beginning to learn, like, man, this is a really cool concept of, like, understanding your value, not based on being better than anybody, but just based on being intentional with the most precious thing we've ever been given. Right? Because, Sean, like, your story with your mom and, like, you know, just being so intentional now with your boys and, like, there's even more stuff that you could be giving away right this second that would free you up to even be more proactive as a dad, right? That's true for all of us. But we get so stuck and we don't know our worth, or we don't trust anything. And then we're not satisfied with, like, well, so-and-so could do it at 75% of you right now. And then that's not good enough. So we won't bite it. You know, we won't go bite it out, hire it out. And I think this is where the struggle is for most people.
Yeah. There's a couple of things that I heard you guys say. One was, like, you know, the reason we don't hire these contractors, the reason they have to be in our office is because that's the way we've always done it.
Yeah.
And Shane, then, you know, you took it a step further when you were describing it. You know, we talk about, you build the role and then you find the person to fit the role, instead of, like, just bringing bodies in and then expecting them to do stuff. And so I think the reason that so many people, they hire somebody, they need them in their office because they didn't put a plan in place. They didn't decide, okay, I need social media, I need video editing, I need some posts on demand for my people to be able to do X and Y. All right, so now who is the best person to do this? And so when you have a plan in place and you put down what you need, then you can actually go execute on it versus, I just need bodies in here and hopefully they're going to learn by osmosis and they're going to take some work off my plate. So it's a win.
And they never do. And, you know, so in the last 18 months, Sean and I have been on a journey, you know, and, like, it was from working for people and assuming we knew what it meant for like somebody to be a CEO or for somebody to be a VP of ops or whatever. Like, you go, I know what they do, I can do that, right? To now having to do those roles. And it's a humbling experience. I'll speak for myself. And so I've reached out and had a lot of intentional time with high level professional coaches about being a business owner, because I didn't grow up being a business owner. My dad passed away when I was young. And so like, for me, it was like, I just, this old fake it till you make it, right? Like that never works well for an extended period of time. And so as you're talking, Sean, what I was thinking about is, you know, the reality is that we're so oftentimes just trying to put like our finger in the hole in the dam. We don't even understand why there's a dam and what it's actually intended for and why there's water there and what happened. It's the what, the why, the when, the how, the who, and what do we need out of that? And so I think it's really important to slow down and take a step back, because I've, all these coaches I've had, extremely successful. One guy was a pastor of a mega church for 30 years with no controversy. That's hard. Another guy created and sold 3 7- to 8-figure companies and didn't get divorced. And his wife loves and respects him. That's hard, right? Like that is my definition of a successful business owner or coach. These guys, everything starts with plan. Everything starts with process. Everything starts with identifying things. And Kyle, what you were talking about is we don't know our worth. People don't understand that really you need to ask yourself, I think, 3 questions when you're looking at bringing on staff. You should only be doing things, in my opinion, that you're good to great at, that you're passionate about, and those are separate. You can love doing something that you're not great at, right? And that's okay, but it also needs to make you money. And it has to be something that someone else can't do at like 75% of you. So it's, what are the things that you're good at and passionate about that make you money that no one else can do at a near level to you? Those, that's your area of expertise. That's your area of like, that's where you're like, no, that's your, I call it your zone of excellence, right? That to me is your zone of excellence. Now that doesn't mean like I started out in my mortgage company and I offloaded a bunch of stuff to a partner. It didn't work. I had to step back in. I became an expert on payroll, not because I intended to be an expert on payroll forever, but because to hire somebody to do my payroll, I needed to understand what I was hiring them to do. And as soon as I got comfortable with that and they took that off my plate, I moved on because I wasn't good at it. I wasn't passionate about it. And there were thousands of other people that could do it at or actually better than me, quite frankly. And so I outsourced it once I knew what I needed, but not before that time.
I think that's the key, right? Is just gaining an understanding. Like most LOs are so deep in the waters all the time that like while they're trying to breathe, we're coaching them to like, yeah, but you need to be able to see like 5 years from now, like while the next wave like crashes on their head. And so, you know, this is what I suck at, but that plan and process is so important because otherwise you have no idea what to do next. And, you know, Shane, what I commend you for is like having the humility to go find people better than you and ask them probably a lot of stupid questions. 100%. That they had to go, that's not the question you should be asking me. You actually should be asking this. And it's like, oh gosh. But if you wouldn't have asked the dumb question, they wouldn't have been able to kind of rebuke you and give you a better alternative. And man, the narcissism in our industry, I think, keeps so many people from having even a willingness to share weakness because they've convinced everybody that they're crushing everything.
I'm so glad you bring this up because I believe what a lot of people do is they create fake humility and then say it because they think it's like, it's a benefit to the people on the call. They're like, I'm not that good at something, but they actually don't say that because they believe that. They say it because they want to get something from the other person. To your point, what I do is I say, guys, I got to be totally honest with you. I screwed up my taxes. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, so I started a mortgage company January of last year. I didn't even know this, but I didn't know how federal taxes worked. I didn't pay taxes for 6 months. So I racked up a $56,000 IRS bill, not because I'm dead broke, I'm a fool, I'm not a hard worker, because it's not my area that I'm an expert on. I didn't know what I didn't know. Now what I do is I go, my number one question to anyone I'm talking to is, I'm not good at this. People who are good at this, what did they ask you? Like, what do the people like that you like? So if I'm meeting with somebody who's an expert on video creation, I go, I'm not good at video, really not good at it, but I know I need to be good at this because it's important for my industry. The people who are good at video, Kyle, what are they asking you? And so it's almost like you're saying, it's not even really the question. The question is, what are the questions that the right people ask you in the right room? And then they go, oh, well, they would be doing the following. And then they go, hey, have you done this? Have you? I'm like, I don't even know what that means. Can you tell me what that means? And they go, oh, well, this is what this website is for the IRS. And then I go, okay, can you hang on a second? I'm not great at this. Can I look at that? Can you explain that to me? Like, be inquisitive and be a learner. And if you're inquisitive with like full humility, like when you get a bill from the IRS for 56 grand, that humbles you, even if you're not super humble. But like, for me, it was like, it was the biggest reminder, the biggest like wet towel across my face. You aren't good at this, but you need to understand it. And you need to ask people and get in the room with the right. So I called my coach. I said, I don't know what I'm doing. I need a bookkeeper who you recommend. And my coach said, this is the gal to call, call her. And it probably almost saved my business in a lot of ways because I was so distracted from the things I should have been spending my time on.
So good. We have so much more that we could dig into. We may need to come back with a part two of this and really dig into the details of it. Any final words, gentlemen, as we wrap this up?
I think we got to do part two. And I think, you know, next podcast, we should talk about those actual hires and those things that they do, because you can't hire the right people if you don't know your need. We know that. We know you got to know your worth, your needs, your values, your cadence, be humble, ask good questions. But then people on this call are going to say, I get that, Kyle. Like, I'm there. I'm desperate. I know my needs and I've spent the time. Now, who do I go get? And I'm excited for you to share on VAs. Sean, I'm really excited for you to speak on that next hire for an originator who's doing the right thing, growing, making money in a tough market. And then I'm excited to share about like my experiences cutting my team from 36 staff, 70% operations, down to no W-2'd operations staff, and how it's freed up my time, my anxiety, my stress is gone, and how it's helped my marriage. And I think there's so much to that, and it's who to hire. Yeah. Not why, not how, but who.
I love it. More to come.
More to come.
All right, guys. We'll see you on the next episode. And if you ever have any questions, you want to continue the conversation, go to becomenl.com, right? We talk about investing, and those who invest always win. And those who invest sooner win sooner.
Yeah.
Whether that's in us, whether that's in yourself, whether that's in both, whether that's in a gym membership, maybe it's investing in Sundays, you know, taking some time with your family, but invest. And we have an opportunity for you to invest. And we'd love to see you on the other side. Lots of things are going to be rolled out. Announcements are going to be had. There's a ton of excitement coming up in the next couple of weeks.
I can't wait.
Thanks, guys.
See you, boys.